Hello and welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about what else the Iditarod and mushing dogs all the way across Alaska. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we get too close to Nome, how about a word from our sponsor?
Support for Iditapod 2020 comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
The Iditapod is a production of Alaska Public Media. It's Tuesday, and we have a twofer on dog profiles coming up. Those were Iditarod musher Jeff Dieter's dogs to start off today's pod. That was unedited, unaltered proof that sled dogs go from noisy to quiet at the start of a run. That was a listener question from earlier. And we'll have another listener question today, as well as a story about the modified Shaktulik checkpoint, a remembrance of an all-star volunteer checkpoint leader in Unalakleet, and a little about how a major, longtime sponsor of the Iditarod has announced it is pulling out. Maybe not all in that order. We'll just have to see. First, though, a race update. Norwegian musher Thomas Warner has maintained his lead in the 2020 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Warner arrived in White Mountain about 5:30 this morning. Again, it's Tuesday. And White Mountain is where all of the teams take a mandatory 8-hour layover, so the teams leave there well-rested, and a front runner with a big enough lead tends to maintain that lead to the finish in Nome. And here's where I'm going to say our sort of catchphrase, anything can happen, but Warner certainly putting himself into a good position to win this race. And when Warner arrived in White Mountain this morning, he was more than 40 miles ahead of his closest competitor. That was, and still is, as I'm recording this, 3-time Iditarod champ Mitch Seavey, who, if you're surprised to hear that he's this far up in the standings, has slingshotted up the standings the last couple days. There's been some of that leapfrogging that you see throughout the Iditarod as teams pass each other, stop to rest, get past themselves, rinse and repeat. But just looking at the official checkpoint times, Seavey passed something like a half dozen teams in the last couple days to slip into second place. The mushers talk about competing strategies of either building a lead, maybe like Warner, or quote-unquote building a monster, which is a CV thing, meaning they bank rest over the first three quarters of the race or so and then unleash this monster of a team that still has a ton of energy to run fast later in the race. Still, unless something unexpected happens, and it still can, Warner is expected to win his first Iditarod early Wednesday morning. Warner's team has continued to post excellent run times and maintained their speed in these final stretches of the race, especially at night when it's a little cooler. All of the teams were going slow Monday with temperatures near or right above freezing, those dogs getting hot out there in the middle of the day. This warm-up came after Warner made a decisive move to mush the 85 miles all the way from Caltag to Unalakleet in one big run. And mushers like Brent Sass have said the warm temperatures pretty much put an end to their hopes of catching up to Warner on the coast. This is after a winter of training in pretty cold temperatures, and Sass told the Iditarod Insider guys that the dogs and his team were just not ready for this warmth. They get used to running in cold weather, their coats actually get thicker, and they're just not prepared to deal with heat. And we don't want to forget about the rest of the field. It actually stretches all the way back some 270 miles from Warner at White Mountain, all the way back to Caltag and Quince Mountain, friend of the podcast. He's the current Red Lantern holder. He's there with Casey Murringer and likely trying to stay in the race at this point and getting pressure maybe from the Iditarod. It's tough for the race to maintain checkpoints, especially this year with things kind of pared down due to worry about coronavirus. But those mushers at the back definitely want a chance to finish their Iditarod, trying to hang on and still make it to Nome. Meanwhile, back at the Bering Sea coast, sled dog teams continue to pass through a modified Shaktulik checkpoint. That is where city leaders decided to close their official checkpoint due to concerns over the spread of coronavirus. They had planned to just leave supplies for mushers at the ruins of the old village site 2 miles away from Shaktulik, but as KNOM's Emily Hofstetter reports, residents could not pass up the opportunity to do more.
The trail from Shaktulik to Koyuk is one of the most exposed sections. Mushers have little opportunity to take shelter from the sometimes fierce wind along the sea ice of the Norton Sound. When Hannah Lynn Sukiak heard that mushers were getting no more than food and drop bags in Shaktulik, she started to plan.
My husband and I were sitting on the couch trying to think about what we can do. So I told him maybe if I just post on Facebook for help, maybe I'll find some help and we'll just start from there.
And the community came out in full force. Most of the buildings had been scrapped or totally weathered away, but they found one little house that had four walls, a roof, and some potential.
At first, they said when they got here, it looked so hopeless, but people just stepped in and started coming. Even if they did something little, it helped a lot, and it just started coming together.
One resident plowed a large lot so dog teams could pull out and rest on straw. Then someone brought a wood stove, another brought a generator, and others brought tables and cots to make a resting place. Linda Bikolic is an Iditarod Trail Committee, or ITC, member and a teacher in Shaktulik. She found herself as sort of the unofficial coordinator of the temporary checkpoint.
There was like 3 or 4 foot of snow inside the house, and so they all had to shovel that out, and it was frozen, so they'd shovel for a while and then shovel more and as it melted. And then they cleaned out the house, and we've had the wood stove going trying to dry it out. And they put Visqueen over the windows to keep the wind out.
There is a clothesline for drying gloves and coats over the roaring wood stove, and a pile of logs sits by a table piled high with food and coffee. They have almost everything a normal checkpoint would have, but it isn't manned by any official Iditarod staff. So Musher's times are not being updated on the leaderboard when they reach the cabin. There isn't a veterinarian on site either. Leaders know that the change is hard for the community. Axel Johnson is the tribal council president and says he is proud of the effort community members have made to take care of the mushers while keeping Shaktulik safe. While the decision to close the checkpoint was made by the city government and not the tribe, Johnson says the council stands behind it.
And the tribe has a sovereignty right to protect its own people from any kind of disease that's coming in.
Johnson says the decision to close the checkpoint was made without a resolution or town meeting. Linda Bikolic says they are encouraging social distancing by asking community members to stay away from the site. Shaktulik isn't closed to visitors, but through closing the checkpoint, they are reducing the amount of traffic.
Usually we have a comms person, a head communication person, a veterinarian, a race judge, and then volunteers from all over the world, actually, that come here. And so when the village said they weren't going to have the checkpoint in the village, then the ITC withdrew all those people.
That's been hard for some people that have formed friendships with some volunteers who have come up for years. Bikolic says she understands the decision was made to protect elders, but it isn't the only way COVID-19 has impacted the morale in Shaktulik. Both the boys and girls basketball teams were meant to play in the state basketball tournament this week in Anchorage.
And so most of the village, we all had tickets to fly to Anchorage this week because it's huge. And when that got canceled, everybody was just like, well, now what are we going to do? Now it's like giving us all something to focus on and to help, you know, with that disappointment of not getting to watch our kids at state. And we've had a lot of those kids from those teams down there helping, chopping wood, making a water hole on the river.
With the exception of Thomas Werner as the first musher in on Sunday night, Shaktulik residents are mostly keeping away and practicing their social distancing.
The community of Shaktulik really coming together to help the Iditarod, even while trying to keep their distance, even in these tough times. Speaking of, we got news last night that Alaska has recorded its second and third confirmed cases of coronavirus. Both were in my hometown of Fairbanks, actually, and involved two unrelated older men who had been traveling separately in the lower 48. If you're outside of Alaska, the lower 48 is what we call the rest of the United States, minus Hawaii. I won't get into everything that we know about these coronavirus cases right now. There's a lot more at alaskapublic.org, but it is worth mentioning that Fairbanks is a hub community, or at least a jumping-off point for a lot of Alaska Native villages. And so the precautions the villages on the Iditarod Trail and elsewhere are taking are certainly not overreactions. Many of them are communities with very limited medical care facilities, if any at all. And the elders there remember how flu and tuberculosis swept through and decimated their populations in the decades past. So as we hear about more cases popping up in Alaska, our thoughts and our hopes for good health are with them and with you, Iditapodders. Please listen to the guidelines that state and federal health officials are putting out and be well. One thing a bit unwell, I guess you could say, is support for the Iditarod by some longtime sponsors. We heard earlier this month that Alaska Airlines was pulling its sponsorship of the race, and now the Anchorage Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram dealership is dropping its sponsorship of the race. We got news of this yesterday, first actually in a press release from PETA, that's People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, a group that, as we've reported in the past, is very critical of the Iditarod. PETA said their protests of the Iditarod had led Chrysler, the parent company, to pull out of sponsoring the Iditarod. When I asked the Iditarod about this yesterday, CEO Rob Urbach, through a spokesperson, said that that news was not true. I called the dealership, didn't get a call back, and then the Associated Press confirmed the news from PETA. A statement from Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, or FCA, noted that that parent company did not sponsor the Iditarod. The statement said, quote, Anchorage Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Center, an independently owned and operated dealership, has been a sponsor of the race. We understand and can confirm the dealership will no longer continue sponsoring the race. As such, FCA and the Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram logos will no longer be associated with the race, end quote. And the AP story noted some uncertainty, like I did, as the news was unfolding yesterday. Chuck Talsky, a spokesman for the Anchorage dealership, who I can tell you really went off on PETA with some very strong, kind of over-the-top words at this year's Iditarod media briefing. Talsky apparently told the AP when they first asked him about this yesterday that the dealership was still planning to sponsor the race again next year, finances permitting. But then later, when informed of Chrysler's statement that I just read, Talsky said, quote, that's kind of news to us. As a franchisee, we are subject to various controls, end quote. So maybe a bitter pill for him to swallow yesterday. The dealership has been one of the Iditarod's principal partners for 30 years, meaning it's among a handful of the biggest sponsors, and it annually presents the race winner with a new pickup truck at the finish line in Nome. So all those jokes that mushers make about needing a new truck or what color truck they might pick out, unclear if that's going to be a thing anymore. In an email yesterday, Rob Urbach, the Iditarod CEO, said, quote, we will address 2021 sponsorships after the conclusion of the race. Our mission is solely focused on executing a safe and healthy race, and we look forward to welcoming race teams to Nome, end quote. So some more big news here right in the middle of the Iditarod as we approach a first-place team finishing tomorrow morning. And turning our focus away from that news and toward a story from Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, Unalakleet continues to welcome sled dog teams arriving there at the coast of Alaska. It's one of the most bustling checkpoints along the Iditarod Trail, and if the Iditarod feels a little different overall this year, so does the Unalakleet checkpoint. For nearly a decade, the community hall there would be packed with people and the air thick with the smell of frying bacon and sourdough pancakes. And a lot of that grew from the efforts of one man, William Johnson, or Mitty to most people. Mitty passed away suddenly in December from a heart attack. And as Zach reports here, people who love him are carrying on his legacy one pancake at a time.
Bacon grease.
Nita Tawarik spoons bacon grease onto a hot griddle, then plops down a big ladle full of sourdough batter.
This is my recipe. Media and I argue. I put an egg. He doesn't. No, but it's sourdough. It's sourdough starter.
Tawarik has long volunteered at the checkpoint, but since Johnson's passing, a new group of Unalakleet residents has stepped up to fill his shoes, which is no easy task, since Johnson was known for staying awake at the stove through the night or on into the morning, turning out food.
When he wanted to do it, he started asking people if they could, so we all pitched in, sort of, but Mitty did all the work. Late nights, during the night, so he was the backbone.
It's a lot different this year, not only because of Johnson's passing, but concerns over COVID-19 led organizers to restrict access to the community hall to just mushers and volunteers. Even in the middle of the day, it's pretty spare inside, without any children, elders, or Iditarod tourists.
It would be bustling if he was here. He loved the kids. He didn't want anyone to be hungry. And especially people too in town that don't have much. He didn't say no to anyone. If they're hungry, you come and eat.
According to Tawarik, before Johnson took it over, the checkpoint was kind of a potluck style, with no one quite in charge. His inspiration came after he ran the Iditarod himself in 2010. Rob Johnson, no relation, remembers that year because it was the first time he came to Unalakleet as a race volunteer.
After that year, Mitty kind of discovered that certain checkpoints do special things. He felt that we ought to be doing something special here in his hometown.
Johnson, the volunteer, lives much of the year in Eagle River, but has come to Unalakleet year after year to help out with the race. He says his grief is nothing compared to what Johnson's family and community are going through, but being back this year feels sad.
It's difficult. I only knew Mitty 1 week at a time, so I suppose that's only 9 weeks of my life that I knew Mitty, but he's a great guy.
That's a sentiment shared by just about everyone who knew Mitty Johnson, including the Mushers, who have spent the last decade in gratitude for the hospitality that he marshaled on their behalf. And for some, like Didi Janro, the bonds go back even further.
I actually knew him from herring fishing, and he's just got a heart of gold and a great personality.
Janro knew Mitty from local sled dog competitions and raced him during his rookie Iditarod run, where she says he'd light up checkpoints with a sense of humor and generosity, sharing traditional foods.
So he decided, you know, from that too, he was going to make Unalakleet Checkpoint one of the funnest checkpoints on the trail. And oh my gosh, he transformed this checkpoint from a good checkpoint into a party time. You know, I mean, bacon party.
John Rowe says even though the coronavirus concerns have meant more somber changes for this year's checkpoint, she still feels Mitty's impact and legacy all around.
But it's still so welcoming and pleasant. You can feel his spirit here, you know. I mean, that sounds kind of obscure, but it isn't, you know. You feel the warmth of the entire family here.
Up on the wall, inside the community building, is a framed set of photos of Johnson, including large, heroic shots of his Iditarod run. Next to them are the jacket and bib he wore during that race, where he placed 33 as a rookie. After this year's Iditarod is in the books, those items will stay with Johnson's family. In Unalakleet, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Nice story there from Zach about Walter Mitty Johnson's impact on the race. And we're going to toss it to Zach again here in a minute to answer today's listener question. But first, the question.
Hi, this is Virginia from Illinois. My question is this. How do the Mushers get all those dogs and their gear and their sleds back from Nome and on to their home states or home countries? What are the logistics of that, and what must that cost? Thank you. I really enjoy Iditapod.
Hi, Virginia. You've hit on a really good question. Logistics for moving all of the things that go into Iditarod around are really, really complicated. And that's certainly true for the Mushers as well. Once they're in Nome, they get everything back by plane. So they're shipping sleds, dogs go into big planes, cargo carriers are part of the operations. I'm not exactly sure how dogs are divided up between commercial airlines and cargo airlines and all the stuff like that. But all the things, all the people, all the sleds, they are flown out. Now, this is really tricky for international mushers, and it's going to be especially tricky this year for the European mushers, who not only need to get their stuff out of Nome, but then out of Alaska and overseas at a time when there's a travel ban. So we're in sort of uncharted territory with that. Thomas Warner, who's in a good position right now this year, is thinking about his wife had to leave the country early to make it back to Norway, where they're from. So we're going to see, but we're in sort of a new situation with all of that. Thanks for your question.
And we're going to go straight from that to some uncharted territory for the Iditapod. It's a Tuesday twofer on dog profiles, and that would be a couple dogs on Jesse Holmes' team named Tempest and Emmett. They're both pretty much entirely black with flopped over ears. Tempest is 2.5 years old with brown eyes, and Emmett is 3 with blue eyes, so slightly different looking. But Holmes, who I talked to at the ceremonial start in Anchorage, describes their personalities as pretty similar.
They both finished the Iditarod. They're nuts. They're insane, you know. So putting them in lead in the right place when it's time to make a move is going to be critical. I'm going to put them in here today because they just love the insanity. They're crazy. They're super calm right now in the box, but once they get on the trail, they're barking and screaming and yelling at everything, trying to drive the team harder. So I think they're a very important factor in my race this year is when I start making the move to try to get to the front pack. So it's like a risky thing to be, you know, counting on trying to make up time on the front back. But
double leader kind of situation?
Yeah, yeah, they're double leaders, yeah. They're the only two that can stand running next to each other because they both bite the dogs and scream at them. But I think I better start getting these dogs hooked up, and thank sure. you for the interview. And
yeah. Just real quick, how much do they weigh?
Oh, that's a great question. So I have 9 males in my team. Only one of them's under 60 pounds. 4 of them are over 70 pounds. All of my females are over 50 pounds. So we got a really powerful team. And one thing I believe that power over distance equals speed. So just kind of hold that power together and let it equal to a better speed in the end.
Okay. I'll let you do your thing. I'm going to come back around.
Jesse Holmes there describing Emmett and Tempest, two dogs on his team. I'm realizing now that his answer to how much they weigh was about his whole team. I can appreciate his explanation, and I have to say, I was talking to him sort of at the entrance to his dog truck while he was inside of it, in between dogs and their dog boxes, and I was holding onto the microphone with one hand and holding onto, like, the rim of the door of the dog truck, trying not to slide backwards down this ramp. Some snow on my boots. It was a little slippery. So a little reporter jujitsu going on there. We are going to continue to hold on as long as we can here on the Ididapod. We will be back tomorrow with another episode, but I've been talking with my bosses at Alaska Public Media about how to proceed with a lot of other news going on that we're trying to cover. We always want to tell stories about the rest of the mushers after the first place team arrives in Nome, but there is a chance that we're going to have to at least put the daily episodes on pause here to have the reporter power that we need to fully cover coronavirus impacts in Alaska. Sorry to say that. I know a lot of you are listening and maybe using this show as a distraction from that other news, so one option is to go back and listen to past episodes. In any case, we'll be back tomorrow and we'll know more about our plans then. I will keep you posted. It seems like things are developing on a daily, sometimes hourly basis, so please stay tuned and check out all of our coverage at alaskapublic.org. That's all the time we have for today. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow at least with another episode of the Ididapod. I'm your host, Casey Grove, and until next time, happy trails.
I'm so confused about why they're... Like, it must be a chicken coop in the garage. Ben and Zach looking for where the chicken sounds are coming from. Shh, 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 shh. I don't hear it over here.